This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Scott Simon, sitting in for Neil Conan, who is on vacation. We're broadcasting today from the House side of the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. Today marks the beginning of the 110th Congress. Democrats control both the House and Senate for the first time in 12 years. The new majority party says they will try to pass a number of laws in their first 100 hours in office. One of the first proposals will affect health care. One bill would allow the federal government to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies to lower the cost of drugs for Medicare recipients. Now, while Democrats say they won't allow Republicans to offer alternative plans in the first 100 days of business, they will have to win bipartisan support in the Senate and get President Bush to sign any bill that results. Democrats and Republicans in both chambers will be forced to confront the rising cost of health care and the nation's soaring number of uninsured. Later on, we'll talk to Deputy House Historian Fred Beitler about where we are today in this lovely room, and we'll talk to Congressman Henry Waxman about a proposal to ban smoking in the Speaker's lobby. But first, can Congress fix health care? What's the top health care issue that you want Congress to address? Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address, if you prefer to contact us that way, is talk@npr.org. Just ahead, we'll get the views from a Democrat and a Republican on health care and what needs to be done to improve it. But first, we turn to NPR's Julie Rovner, health policy correspondent for this network, and she joins us here in the Capitol. Julie, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Does this Congress's attitude and willingness to look at health care differ from the last one?
I think so. Clearly, the Democrats have an advantage when it comes to health care with the voters. They've always had an advantage when it comes to health care with the voters. Even when the Republicans were in charge and the Republicans tried to gain some kind of an advantage, obviously passing the Medicare prescription drug bill was an attempt by Republicans to try and cut into that advantage that Democrats had. But health care is traditionally a Democratic large D issue, and Democrats come into this Congress with a desire to make health care a bigger issue than Republicans ever did. Ironically, perhaps, there are a lot of issues coming up this year that Democrats and Republicans agree on when it comes to health care. There are a number of deadlines coming up.
The Children's Health Insurance Program?
Indeed, that's one of them. That program expires at the end of August. That's something Democrats and Republicans put together in 1997, and that's something they'll have to work on together.
You mentioned that the Democrats are more identified with health care as an issue. They are, it must be noted, mostly identified with the failure, when they had the presidency, to put that across in meaningful legislative terms that changed health policy in this country.
Indeed. Well, that was certainly an effort to have universal health care. Mm-hmm. But Democrats are also associated with the creation of Medicare and the creation of Medicaid. Democrats, of course, are associated with a lot of other things about health care than simply the failure of the Clinton health care plan. So it's not just that. And I don't think we'll see in this...
Medicare was 30 years ago?
40.
40 years ago.
42 now.
Yeah. So the number of Americans who identify the party with that might be not what it was when the Clintons were in office.
That is perhaps true. But certainly as an issue, if you look at polls over the years, the Democratic advantage on health care is large, and in this last election has gotten even larger.
How have health care issues changed since the last time the Democrats controlled a branch of government? Because there have been a lot of new technologies and new expectations created over the past 12 years.
I think there are indeed a lot of new issues. And interestingly, I think a lot of issues have gotten more bipartisan. Stem cell research, which you didn't mention, which is also one of these top six issues that the Democrats will take up in these first 100 hours, is a very bipartisan issue. It's an issue that, if it passes, and it's expected to pass, and it's indeed one of the top issues that the Senate will take up also, something that the president used his first veto on, and yet it's expected to be a close vote for a veto override. So that's something there's a lot of Republican support on. Health information technology, computerizing medical records, is something that Democrats and Republicans work together on. We've seen Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton and former House Speaker Newt Gingrich come together on that. So I think even though there's still a big split on things like universal health care, where Democrats and Republicans disagree on how to do that, we've seen a lot more bipartisanship on these, what I call sort of the second-tier health care issues.
We mentioned this proposal is going to reach the floor. How does the government negotiate with pharmaceuticals? pharmaceutical companies under this legislation?
We're still waiting to see, and we're only getting little bits of details, and we will see.
I mean, make them an offer they can't refuse. What was that?
That's certainly one of the thoughts. And I have one of the semantic issues that people keep trying to correct. This is not a bill that will allow the government to negotiate. It's actually going to be a bill that will require the government to negotiate. Now, right now, in the Medicare bill that passed in 2003, mm-hmm. there is a ban on the government negotiating prices for Medicare prescription drugs. This bill, which we're told is now only 3 pages long, will not only delete that, so it would allow it, but then it will also require it. But now we're told that it may not require it for every drug. It may simply require it for some drugs that are sort of egregiously expensive, if you will, the way perhaps after the anthrax attacks in mm-hmm. 2001, then HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson went out and basically jawboned down the price of Cipro, the antibiotic that was used to fight anthrax. So it may just be a certain number of drugs that are very expensive. So it's not entirely clear exactly how it would work. I think tomorrow morning we're supposed to get the actual text of the bill when it gets introduced.
Mm-hmm. So there's still some room for maneuver as we talk. Mm-hmm. That essentially maybe bring down the price of, and I'm filling in the blanks, Cipro or insulin, but let Cialis still go for whatever it sells for.
That's entirely possible.
Why did I choose that of all examples as a matter of fact? Well, something that's not considered to be
I'm not sure that one's covered under Medicare.
Yeah, I don't believe it is from what I've read. Let's take a call if we can right now. Anne in San Mateo, California.
Hi,
Anne. Nice to talk to you.
A problem within the federal government's own employee health plan. I've been told that it will take an act of legislation to change it. Most health plans have a three-tier system of coverage, self and one other person, which would cover like a spouse, husband and spouse, or a single mother with one child, or self and family. The federal government only has a two-tier system. It only covers self only or self and family. So the vast numbers of federal employees that only have two-person households are having to pay a much higher premium at a family level. And I, as a government employee, am having to pay that, but the federal government is also having to match those premiums and is paying a lot more money. Now, the private insurance companies might not like this because they'll get less money, but mm-hmm. I think it's a simple piece of legislation that could be enacted to just change it. The federal government now has a new dental program, which is three-tiered, but this form of legislation about the federal government's health plan was enacted, you know, I don't know, back in the 50s or 60s and hasn't been addressed or looked at or changed.
Hmm. Anne, thank you very much for calling.
Sure.
I wasn't aware that there was only two tiers in the federal employees' health plan. It's actually considered an excellent plan and a plan that a lot of legislators have looked at as possibly a model for a universal plan for the nation. But obviously there'll be new lawmakers in charge of all the committees that look at these plans, so I imagine if that's something that people would like to have changed, this would be an opportune time to have it looked at.
Let me put it this way. How would you describe the apparent differences, generally speaking, in philosophy between the Republican and Democratic approach to health care? Because nobody is in favor of elderly people not being able to get the drugs they need to survive. Nobody is in favor of people having to do without health care. What's the difference in philosophical approach?
It's fairly simple. The Republicans believe in letting the market do it, and the Democrats generally believe in letting the government do it. I mean, that's an oversimplification, but in general, that's what it really comes down to. It's which can do it more efficiently, the market or the government? That healthcare is really, so at the moment, kind of a combined market and government combination that doesn't really work very well. Everybody agrees that it doesn't really work very well. The question is, should it lean more towards the government or more towards the market to make it work better? And I think that as a society, we've been kind of stuck which way to sort of tilt ever since, and we've not really been able to agree on which way to go. And we've done really neither, and costs have continued to kind of spiral out of control as we fought about it.
What about, maybe I'll coin the phrase here, it has some vintage, the Massachusetts miracle, because the Republican governor of Massachusetts, Mitt Romney, signed an extensive health care bill. And I know there are some people that says this could be a signal for the nation.
Well, at this point, the Massachusetts miracle is really a Massachusetts blueprint. So yeah. I think when the Massachusetts miracle gets all built and somebody puts a key in the door and unlocks it and people move in, people will be a lot more impressed with it. It's certainly an impressive blueprint, an impressive foundation that they're laying, but it hasn't happened yet. And Massachusetts has passed sort of impressive plans before, and they've not quite come to fruition. So everybody is watching Massachusetts with a lot of interest to see if it will work, but it's not quite there yet.
Let's take a call now, if we can, from Lucy in Tucson. Lucy, can you hear us?
Yes, pretty clear.
Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. Same here. I have elderly parents. They're in their early 80s, and they're middle class to upper middle class. And I find that they go to the doctor so often, and they're tested so often for the same condition over and over again, because they need to know every month if they're doing well or if they're doing better. And I see a lot of waste, a lot of duplication. I see them, and of course they're on Medicare, and I've asked them about it. I've told them, do you know that this is, you know, I'm seeing it as wasteful, and they reply, well, I have it, I'm entitled to it. I get it through Medicare, and I'm entitled to it. The prescriptions also, they fill the whole prescription, and then they find that they can't, they have an intolerance for the prescription, for the medication, and then it goes to waste. And I'm just looking at all of this waste, and I see it in other elderly people that I know, and I'm just wondering, I'm in my 50s, and I'm wondering, is there going to be any money left for me, for my children? And I'd like a response to that, if you can.
Sure. Thank you very much for calling. Julie, that's been one of the cautions about extending coverage.
This has been an enormous concern, that there are a lot of people who are getting too much care. There are clearly a lot of people who are getting not enough care. There's an enormous amount of research going into what's the appropriate amount of care, and nobody really knows. That's the sort of the magic bullet, is finding, you know, value for dollars, is finding, creating the right incentives to have an efficient system to get people the right amount of care in the right place at the right time, and nobody has yet figured out exactly how to do it.
Yeah. It must be said, in 30 seconds we have left, when people are now talking about new medical technologies and new possibilities becoming available, this will also have the cost. This will also have the effect, arguably, of increasing healthcare costs, won't it?
Healthcare is, ironically, one of the few things where, when you get new technology, it doesn't get less expensive. I mean, computers, cars, iPods, everything else tends to get cheaper as you get sort of the next generations, and healthcare gets more expensive.
Okay. NPR's Julie Robner, thanks very much for being with us on Capitol Hill. We're broadcasting live today from the U.S. Capitol as a new Congress takes the helm. When we come back, we'll hear from a Democrat and a Republican about their views about healthcare, and more of your calls at 800-989-TALK, or you can send us an email at talk@npr.org. I'm Scott Simon. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. We're broadcasting live today from the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., and we're talking about the new Congress's plans for health care in this country. It's a priority in their first 100 hours, and of course, we'd like to hear from you. Please give us a call at 800-989-TALK, or our email address is talk@npr.org. Now we're going to hear from a couple of members of Congress. Congressman Frank Pallone is a Democrat from New Jersey. He is expected to be the next chairman of the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on health care. Thanks very much for being with us, Congressman.
Thank you, Scott.
And Congressman Dave Camp is a Republican from the state of Michigan. He is expected to become the ranking member of the House Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health. Both gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Camp.
Good to be here, Scott.
Both of them obviously joining us here on Capitol Hill. Congressman Pallone, let's begin with you. You think this Congress is going to be different on health care?
I think it will be, because one of the hallmarks of this Democratic majority is that we want to address issues of affordability for Americans, and health care is certainly the one where the affordability issue is of the most concern. And there's so many issues that, you know, fall into that category. I mean, the fact that prescription drug costs are high, the fact that so many Americans don't even have access, don't even have health insurance. So there are a number of issues that need to be addressed under the affordability umbrella.
Mr. Camp, your party had power for 12 years in the Congress, a lot of that obviously with a Republican in the White House. Do you feel that your party addressed the rising cost of health care sufficiently?
Well, in a couple of ways. I think the change we made in Medicare, looking at preventative, Medicare had always been a system that only helped you if you were sick, and it was a dramatic turn in the program, and it was a bipartisan issue, frankly, in terms of addressing it that way. I think that made some help. But we've done some great things with HSAs, health savings accounts, plans to try to help small business people lower the costs. A lot of the uninsured are working, and we need to find ways to address that. So I think we can probably approach this in a bipartisan way. We've got a lot of issues we've worked on. They're easy to diagnose, very difficult to fix.
Let me ask about the one that apparently is on issue right now, the whole idea of enabling the federal government, in fact, charging the federal government to negotiate to bring down the price of pharmaceuticals.
That is one of the issues that we intend to deal with in the first 100 hours, you know, within the next 2 weeks or so. And I think it's really important. Right now, the federal government negotiates prices for veterans and for the military, and the costs come down about 40% because of those negotiations. So I think that with the Medicare prescription drugs, if you can reduce costs by 40%, you could use that money to cover the donut hole in some of the gaps that now exist with that Medicare prescription drug coverage and make it easier for seniors to afford their medications.
Mr. Camp?
Well, the way they do that in the VA is, of course, to restrict choice and restrict access. There's only a handful of VA pharmacies around the country. There's 54,000 local pharmacies. We certainly don't want to have a program that denies seniors the ability to go to their local pharmacist. This is a very important issue. I think too important to rush through without one hearing, without any effort. I think this is an area that we can try to move ahead by in a bipartisan way, but we want to go through a regular order and go through a process. There are a lot of experts. Not one senior, millions of seniors will be affected by this change. Not one senior has testified before Ways and Means or Energy and Commerce on this issue in the new Congress. I think that's unfortunate.
If I could just explain, the problem right now is that the federal government is totally prohibited under the Medicare legislation the Republicans passed to have any kind of federal negotiating power. And basically what we're doing is repealing that provision that says that the federal government cannot negotiate prices for the prescription drugs. Now, that doesn't mean that it's just going to be a strict formulary the way Dave is suggesting. There's going to be a lot of leeway in terms of what the federal government can do, but we just think that it's wrong to not give the federal government the possibility, and in this case it will be the Bush administration, to negotiate prices. And I think that's a very important thing. We need to move in the direction of trying to reduce costs for prescription drugs as well as a lot of other healthcare issues.
Let's take some calls, if you gentlemen are agreeable. We're now going to Michael in Eureka, California. Michael, can you hear us?
Hi, yes. I'm calling on a cell phone, and I'm trying to get my business going here, but I feel like this is...
You're not driving, are you, Michael?
I'm sorry?
You're not driving, are you?
I am not driving. No, I'm walking around in my building trying to take care of a delivery coming in and installations and stuff, so I'm a little breathless. But anyway, I really feel that this issue is so important for the nation. As a small businessman, most of my staff is not insured for health care. I am not insured for health care because I can't afford it. Things that I see for us here as a solution, though, is that there's already a huge amount of money being spent on health care for various segments, all fractionalized, so that you've got, like in California, we have Medi-Cal, then there's the federal Medicare, there's California's workers' compensation plan, and I understand in the 90s, early 90s, that plan cost somewhere upwards of $3 billion a year, and two-thirds of that did not even go towards medical payments, it went towards administration and other things. So it just seems to me if the people in Congress really want to do something for the economy and the people of this country, then they will figure a way to take the money that's already being spent through these other programs, roll it into a single-payer system, have a department set up that are advocates for health care, for lower costs, for reasonable medical treatment, set up a plan where there's a review by medical professionals, maybe some kind of rotating review of the doctors that are out there that we have right now, and if they have the expertise to comment on treatment plans of a patient where someone is protesting the treatment, then that doctor looks over the records and deals with it on a medical basis. So much of what we have now is being dealt with by insurance agents and lawyers and judges, specifically in the workers' comp. And, anyway, I just feel like it's inefficient, and money would be better spent if it was all rolled into one program.
Okay, Michael, thanks very much for calling, and let's get Mr. Camp and Mr. Pallone to respond. Mr. Camp, do you want to begin?
Well, I think a single-payer system is a behemoth that doesn't really get us the cost reductions that we need to have. I mean, he's a small business person working, and his employees can't afford or don't have health care. So it really, that is an area that I think we both would agree that we need to address. But what we've seen in Medicare, for example, where we've had private companies competing, we've actually seen the costs of the program reduced significantly from what was projected, which is probably the first time in government history that we've had that happen, but also the premiums that seniors are paying are down 35%. So I think to go away from that without a hearing would not be an approach that would be helpful. But I do think we do need to find ways to address cost, particularly for those people who are working. I think a single-payer system in Canada has not given all of the benefits that we would like to see. There's long waiting lines. Mm-hmm. You can actually get better care for your animals through a veterinary process in Canada than you can for individuals in some cases.
I bet there are Canadians coming into Michigan, if not exactly your district.
All over the world, people come into America when they want quality health care, but it's not available for everyone. I think that's an area we would both agree we need to work on, is access and cost.
Mr. Pallone.
Well, I want to be very practical here. You have to understand that we're not going to pass a single-payer system. I mean, there simply wouldn't be the votes for it. So I don't see any point in you know, pursuing that at this point. But I do think that we can do certain things with employer-based system, which we still primarily relate to employers to get our health insurance, as well as some of the government programs that fill in the gaps. And what I'd like to see is either through the tax system or through some kind of coverage by the government, say catastrophic costs, that we bring costs down for employers so they have an easier time buying health insurance for their employees. And secondly, that we boost up some of the government programs. One of the first things we'll probably address is the SCHIP, the Kids Care Program, so that we can get more kids covered who fall in the cracks because their parents don't have health insurance even though they're working. So with a combination of government programs being expanded, as well as trying to boost up the private sector by making it easier for employers to cover health insurance for employees, I think we can get a lot more people insured. We're not going to do a single-payer system. It's just not going to happen politically.
And I think particularly with regard to SCHIP, you're going to find common ground on that area.
Let's take a call now, if we could, from Jim in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Jim,
thank
are you
there? You. I have a
comment. By the way, congratulations on Brett Favre's last game.
Great, yeah, wasn't he?
I say that as a Bears fan. It was good to see him go out so well.
I have a comment and a question. The comment is, you're talking about the veterans, and I'm a disabled vet, and God bless the Veterans Administration, because I get my medication through the mail. And they're on time. It's excellent. But my question is to both the representatives is, wouldn't it be better if the states dealt with the pharmaceutical companies? Like in the state of Wisconsin, we just elected a real fine governor, Governor Doyle. Now, if he could exempt the sales tax on medication, like I think it's 6% above what the proprietor pays for the mm-hmm. item. I know they had a big thing in Green Bay about Walmart was undercutting people. So that six, they had to come up to that 6%. Wouldn't that be easier if they just exempt that and let the market flow? Thank you.
Well, thank you, Jim. Thanks very much for calling. Mr. Pallone?
Well, I would say you try anything. I mean, certainly, you know, counties, localities, states have, you know, tried to do things to bring down costs for prescription drugs. But I really believe that if you negotiate, if you let the federal government, the Medicare Administration, negotiate prices in a fashion similar to what we do with the VA or with the military, that we can bring down costs significantly. I mean, the bottom line is when you're negotiating, the more people you have, and at the federal level, you'd have over 40 million seniors, the easier it's going to be in a bargaining position to bring those costs down. So I do think it's crucial. And as I said, in the first 100 hours, the Democratic majority does intend to give the federal government that power, because we really think it can make a difference. And it's a lot easier to negotiate for those 40 million seniors than it is, you know, for a county or a state to do it. But certainly there's nothing to stop any locality from instituting these kinds of programs. And I know they have. They have in my state of New Jersey and in some of the counties that I represent.
Well, I think the states are doing great work here. I think he's got a tremendous point here. But the fact is we are bringing down costs with the program as it exists. 70% of the seniors are happy with the program as it's designed. So to change something that's actually bringing down costs, premiums are 35% lower than were anticipated, to change that without one hearing or one testimony from an expert or a senior or a healthcare provider, I think is a mistake. And hopefully in the future we'll be able to come together on some other aspects of this program, because I think it's unlikely that this will get through the Senate and get a presidential signature. So it'll be a great political statement for the first few days, but hopefully then we can come back together and work on some real solutions to these problems.
Scott, if I could just say, you know, on the Energy and Commerce and the Health Subcommittee in the last Congress, we did have hearings on the whole issue of negotiated prices, and I actually sponsored an amendment that would have struck the provision that says that the federal government can't negotiate prices. So we feel in the Democratic majority now that we spent a lot of time in the last Congress dealing with this issue. There was a difference of opinion, but there really isn't that much more to discuss, that this provision simply should be repealed. Right now, the federal government is prohibited from any kind of negotiations. Now, that just shouldn't be. They should have the option to look into different options, including negotiated prices, which they don't now because the Republicans specifically said that that was not an option.
Well, I would just say the record for change is not there. In fact, the record suggests just the opposite, that the program as designed is lowering costs because there's some private competition in it.
Let's hold off for just one moment and tell those of us, those listeners who just might be joining us, you're listening, and for anyone else, too, for that matter, you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Why don't we go now to Kate in Florence, South Carolina. Are you there, Kate?
Yes, sir. How are you?
Fine, thanks. Nice of you to call. What do you, your question, your comment?
Okay, my first comment is that even though I'm in Florence, I am a Floridian, and so we've been discussing health care because we're going to have an exponential rise in seniors in our state's population. So I'm more concerned. I'm also 21 years old, so I've been thinking about what's Social Security going to be like, what's Medicare going to be like when I retire. And so what I would like to say to the congressman, in fact, to ask their opinion is, is there a way to create a system where maybe we could incrementalize the role of the government in each American? Like maybe if the some Americans who are poor and have absolutely no expendable income on healthcare and they're just trying to put food on the table and have a roof over their head, maybe have a pay-in system where, you know, they can receive full assistance from the government. But then as, somebody who has more expendable income, they can have like a half and half choice. Maybe some of it have government assistance, some of it, you know, they make the choice. But then with the Americans that have the most expendable income, they have the option of, you know, having totally private care and not relying on the government. Because I just think that whether the market can handle it or not, or whether the entire government needs to do it, we obviously can't swing one way or the other. We all agree on that. But at the same time, I think it would be wise to, have a system where as time progresses that we can set up more and more Americans to be independent from the government in terms of getting health care access. So what do you guys think about that?
All right. By the way, Kate, thanks very much for calling. And Mr. Camp, you first.
Well,
please.
I think Kate's point is exactly what HSAs were designed to do, allow people to, through the tax code, accumulate some assets so that they can make the choices and affect their own destiny with regard to health care. HSAs allow that amount to be carried over from year to year, which was not the case with previous plans. So you can actually accumulate. It's inheritable. And I think she's looking at those kinds of approaches. With regard to some of the things she suggested, Medicaid would certainly be the answer for people who have no assets and need to get care. And that's in Frank's committee's jurisdiction, not in Ways and Means. But there are many programs there, but I think we should expand. And again, I think AHPs for small business people to use their group bargaining power to try to bring down costs would be something that would help those small business people and those people who are working to find a way to make healthcare more affordable.
Well, one of the cautions, if I could follow up for a moment, Mr. Camp, about some of that thinking, as I probably don't have to tell you, is that what if people make the wrong choices? Are we still willing to? Are we really willing to lock them off from effective healthcare if they just sign on to the wrong plan or invest unwisely?
Well, certainly we have a system where some people have declined to pay for health care at all, and if they're sick, they go to an emergency room and receive help. But if we have a health care system that doesn't make access possible, you end up denigrating the entire system because people will receive care, and that will raise costs for everyone else because we don't deny people care in this country.
Mr. Pallone.
Well, Scott, yeah, I want to say one thing. You know, part of the concern that I had with the previous Congress and the Republican majority is it was very ideologically oriented. And again, I say I'm very practical. I know that Dave was talking about the health or medical savings accounts, and the problem I saw with that is I think that there was such a reluctance on the part of the Republicans to deal with government programs that, you know, the answer always was, let's do something privately. And the problem with medical savings accounts is there are just not that many people that can take advantage of it because they're just not making enough money. I mean, when you talk about lack of access to health care right now, it's mainly people who work, but their employers don't provide or they can't afford to provide insurance. So the only way you're going to continue with that employer-based system is if you make it cheaper for the employer. And I think, you know, you have to look at the tax code. You have to look at maybe covering catastrophic so that you bring their costs down. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to afford it. And for government programs, it's going to cost some money to expand them. I don't think you can rely on the private sector that much.
Congressman Frank Pallone from New Jersey, Congressman Dave Camp, Republican from Michigan, sorry to cut both of you off. Thank you very much for joining us. A little history when we come back, and smoking in the Speaker's lobby. I'm Scott Simon. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.